You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Rebecca Ibarra in for Tanzina. After the police killing of George Floyd and the racial justice uprisings that followed across the country, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed an executive action pushing for policing changes at the local level. The order required every locality with a police department to submit a reform plan by today, April 1st, or risk losing state funding. But while this might seem like a comprehensive policing overhaul, some critics of the order argue that it doesn't do nearly enough. Governor Cuomo gave no real blueprint for what the reform plans need to include, leaving communities to decide what changes to make on their own. Here with us now is George Joseph, an investigative reporter with WNYC's Race and Justice Unit. Good to have you here, George.
Hey, Rebecca.
So what exactly does this executive order require from cities and towns in New York?
So, you know, last year after the massive Black Lives Matter protests, Governor Cuomo tried to sort of implement his own vision of police reform. But because so much of policing is sort of controlled at the local level, he used sort of his power of the purse at the state level to say, look, every single municipality across the state, which is over 500 of them, needs to submit a reform plan by April 1st. And if you don't, you may lose state funding, which is really important to some departments across the state.
And how varied are the different plans that the localities have put out?
So Governor Cuomo's sort of letter to these executives at the local level didn't really specify very much. It listed numerous things they could consider to change. For example, use of force, restorative justice, you know, focused deterrence. You know, there's so many different types of ideas that localities could use here. But all they really said sort of as a structure is that localities have to reach out to locals, meet with community groups, come up with a plan, get the plan ratified, and then submit to the state. But there's no clear criterion of you need to do X, Y, and Z because that meets best practices. So what we're seeing across the state is it really all comes down to the politics, the political will, and frankly, sort of the knowledge base of locals on how they're going to change their departments.
Were there any other localities that were more resistant to putting together any comprehensive reform policies?
You know, that varies across the state. We've seen in sort of small towns, especially upstate, some resistance at these town halls from police chiefs where, you know, someone will say that police are racist and then the chief will say, no, we don't have that problem here. But, you know, even in the biggest police department in New York City, the NYPD, where there have been tons of protests and there are tons of sort of reform organizations, the changes haven't been as dramatic in the city as in other parts of the state. You know, some of the stuff that the NYPD is implementing in response to this are, you know, implicit bias training, more diversity in the force. These are initiatives that had already been tried before and are sort of ongoing for the NYPD. They're not necessarily the sort of radical defunding stuff that activists were calling for, although there is some shifting of funding in New York to a small degree.
So then what actually happens if an agency doesn't have their plan ready by today or if the governor doesn't approve of the plans they made?
So we have to wait and see on that. Thus far, it's too early to sort of say that, you know, the governor is going to reject any of these plans. You know, that would really depend on the governor's political calculus if he wants to take a harder stand on what localities need to do. Some critics felt like this was just a way for the governor to show that he was making a change by requiring these reforms, but by not really giving any rules about it, you know, basically allowing localities to do whatever they wanted to do.
Huh. I have a feeling I'll know the answer to this question, but George, you've been reporting on corruption in police departments in the state. Will this address anything related to corruption in those police departments?
You know, again, it really depends on the local political will. For example, one of the places that I've reported on is a small town called Mount Vernon. And in Mount Vernon, which is a fairly, you know, not super well-funded police force, they are using this opportunity as a way to kind of modernize. So they're finally, you know, proposing things that people in big cities may consider basics, like body cameras or public information officers for their department to, you know, help the public understand what's going on with the police department. You know, these things sound like basics, but we have to remember so much of American policing is decided at the local levels in small cities and towns. And so in some ways, this push is not just to reform, it's to modernize.
And apart from this executive order, what else has New York State done to address police brutality and corruption since last summer?
There's been quite a bit of activity at the legislative level. You know, listeners may not be aware that for decades, New York had much stricter laws protecting disciplinary records for police from coming out, you know, even as compared to other states like Texas and Florida. So one of the big changes right after the George Floyd protest was that the legislature repealed one of those secrecy laws. And now cities across the state, from Rochester down to New York City, have been putting out sort of thousands of documents, finally going back years on police misconduct findings.
So now that these plans are in, what are you watching for next when it comes to policing in New York, George?
Well, there's so much that reform advocates still want. One thing I'm watching in particular is sort of on the surveillance side of things. You know, in recent years, there's been such a sort of quiet adoption of technologies like DNA databases and facial recognition software, often in partnership with private companies. But there's very little regulation, especially at the state level, for the use of these technologies and how police are using them in the criminal investigations. So we'll see if advocates and privacy rights advocates' calls for more regulation of those technologies finally comes to fruition.
George Joseph is an investigative reporter for WNYC's Race and Justice Unit. Thanks so much for joining us, George.
Thank you.
As we just heard, today is the deadline for every city and town in New York State to submit police reform plans to Governor Andrew Cuomo. The City Council of Rochester, New York, voted to approve their city's plan earlier this week. Here's Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren at a conference outlining the proposed overhauls in February.
My uncle was the first person to receive compensation from a lawsuit that he had filed against the city of Rochester for police officers brutally beating him back in the 1960s. So this work is very, very important to me. It is personal to me. It is personal to my family. And I want to get it right for all of you, the citizens of Rochester.
This all comes at a moment when the Rochester Police Department is facing increased public scrutiny. Over the past year, Rochester police officers have been at the center of multiple high-profile incidents of police brutality, including the killing of Daniel Prude in March of 2020 and the pepper spraying of a 9-year-old girl earlier this year. But according to the civilian-led Rochester Police Accountability Board, the city's police reform plans are unlikely to create meaningful change within Rochester. Here with us now is Connor Dwyer Reynolds, Executive Director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Thanks for being here, Connor.
Rebecca, wonderful to be with you.
First off, what should people know about the role of Police Accountability Board in Rochester?
You know, we are a community-led organization dedicated to establishing community control of our police department and our public safety system.
And for listeners who aren't familiar with Rochester, how distinct is the city's police department compared to other similarly sized cities?
You know, we're an outlier. You know, compared to about the 75 cities closest to us in size, we have twice as many officers. You know, the only city nearly our size that has more officers is Birmingham, Alabama.
Wow. So last year, the Police Accountability Board put out a proposal detailing changes you wanted to see for policing in Rochester. So what were some of the key pieces of that proposal?
You know, the heart of that proposal was that the community wanted fundamental change rather than piecemeal reform. You know, community clearly spoke up and wanted immediate, you know, millions of dollars investments in alternative first responder programs that put social workers and mental health providers on the front lines, They wanted to remove white supremacy from institutions of policing and public safety. And they wanted the community to be leading when it comes to reshaping the public safety budget to ensure we have an equitable system in Rochester.
You say remove white supremacy. What does that look like in action?
It's a couple of things. It's making sure that we're screening out white supremacists from our public safety forces, including our police department, as well as looking at the systems and rules that enforce things like white supremacy in our city when it comes to enforcement patterns like stop and frisk and other practices.
So, Connor, how does the city's plan compare to your proposal?
You know, there's a lot of things missing from the city's plan in our proposal. You know, some of the most important things that we pushed for were concrete deadlines and hard funding commitments to make sure that the public knew that real change would actually get implemented. A lot of the proposals in the current plan that the city submits are pretty vague, saying, you know, we'll do things in some years to come, but not specify what the exact things will be, and commitments to say that they'll increase funding to programs without giving dollar signs.
So how are you feeling about the proposed plan then?
Well, you know, it's an election year. And so, you know, these plans come out pretty often whenever there's an incident of police brutality. And I think what Rochesterians want are investments in the current institutions that are community-led that are already dedicated to creating fundamental changes, you know, plans for change and reform, and for ensuring that officer misconduct is addressed quickly, fairly, and transparently. And that's what we have in the Police Accountability Board, which was, you know, created by an overwhelming referendum supporting by Rochesterians in 2019. And so, you know, any plan that doesn't, you know, fully support and fund the existing Police Accountability Board, I'm not sure that Rochesterians should have a ton of faith that, vague promises are going to do a ton.
We mentioned the killing of Daniel Prude, as well as the incident from this year where an officer pepper sprayed a 9-year-old girl. Both Prude and the girl were Black. So have there been any significant changes within Rochester's police department in response to either of those incidents?
You know, the Rochester Police Department has been rolling out some new policies, like things like a duty to intervene to make sure that officers respond when others are doing wrong, things like de-escalation policies and practices. But the trouble with rolling out new policies is that, you know, anyone who's involved in policing knows that new policies are just words on paper unless there's sustained training on the front end to make sure officers understand what they're supposed to do, and then disciplinary policies on the back end to make sure that rules are followed. We haven't seen those things yet from the Rochester Police Department. So right now, we can't be sure that any of the changes that the police are doing to kind of reform themselves are actually creating change.
So the Police Accountability Board says that Rochester residents want a fundamental overhaul of public safety in your city. Is that true across the board for white residents as well as Black and brown residents?
You know, I think that, you know, in any community, we can't characterize them as monoliths. But the important thing to remember is that something that hopefully makes this moment different is you do see across racial and demographic groups real support for concrete change. Now, we saw thousands and thousands of Rochesterians take to the streets over the last year. The community standing up united to say something needs to change across our system. You know, they overwhelmingly supported the Rochester Police Accountability Board, too. That's why I have faith that in the short to medium term, we will have fundamental change in Rochester.
How fully have Rochester officials acknowledged the role that racism plays in the city's criminal justice system?
You know, it's been hard. You know, the Police Accountability Board is very focused on talking about things like white supremacy, systemic racism, misogyny, these kind of structural oppression that really gets to the heart of what the problems with our system are. And I think it's been hard to get people to, you know, say those phrases and words, but it takes more than just saying them. It takes having policies, procedures, practices that constantly center these ideas and then attacks them frontally. And so we're kind of a long ways away from really getting to the place where we need to be when confronting these structural issues in our public safety system in Rochester.
So then, Connor, what needs to happen going forward to create lasting change for policing in Rochester, according to you and the board?
You know, the board is so focused on making sure that the community's voices get heard. When we were developing our policy, you know, our proposals for change, we went out and specifically solicited the voices of unhoused people, Black and brown people, former officers, formerly incarcerated people. These are the groups that see the most when it comes to policing, and they're the voices that need to be centered. And so I think that what the Rochester Police Accountability Board is looking for is systems of empowerment ways of doing government differently. Because when we talk about policing, it can be easy to just focus narrowly on things like, you know, incidents of police brutality. But mm-hmm. in cities across the country, the most powerful and largest part of government is policing. So when we talk about changing policing, what we're talking about is changing the fundamentals of government and politics. And so if we don't have an approach that empowers ordinary people when it comes to policing reform, I doubt that we're going to see actual lasting fundamental changes to our cities across New York.
Connor Dwyer Reynolds is the executive director of the Rochester Police Accountability Board. Thanks so much, Connor.
It's wonderful to be here. Take care.